You are listening to the Paper Player Podcast, where we focus on in-person magic. I'm your host, Tony, and I'm joined with my three co-hosts, Jeff, Josh, and JB. JB, welcome back. I know it's been a couple weeks. Are you still rocking Blue-Red Delver in Modern?
Yes, I am, and I really, really like the deck, so I've been having a lot of fun with it.
Did you play any Magic this weekend?
Yeah, I went to there was like a Sunday event, and I went and got beat up pretty good, and I went 2-2. But I got some pretty good trades out of it, so I'm happy with it.
Josh, you sling any spells?
Yes, I also played Blue-Red Delver, and I should sit down and talk with JV about how different our decks are. I went to FNM, and I 4-0'd.
Are you on a Delver list?
Yeah, no. No Delvers at all.
Got it.
But the red guy, the Dragon Rage Channeler, is like better than Delver. The Surveil is just so good. Yeah. I will admit, though, that someone had to remind me that I had to attack with that.
Yeah, that's kind of a little bit of a downside, especially when you're playing on the defensive. Jeff, you get any spells in this weekend?
Sadly, I didn't this weekend. I was a little busy. I did get to mess around on Arena a little bit, but only played Historic, sadly. So no Modern for me this weekend, but this coming weekend, I will definitely be slinging some spells.
Sweet.
What about you?
I got zero magic in. Well, let me rephrase that. I played no paper magic at all. I played a lot of Arena. I think I got about 8 to 10, or I got 8 seals in like 11 drafts. So I've kind of done with the Dungeons. Yeah, I'm already done with the Dungeons and Dragons set. that was kind of where I played Magic. I was chained at home. The old ball and chain kept me there.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about doing that? Like playing so much of the pre-release before the pre-release?
It's not really a pre-release. It's actually just a release because you can play it in Standard and stuff.
Sure, but you know what I mean. Like getting access to the pre-release before you actually have like a paper tournament.
I miss it. Like, so Modern Horizons 2, we got really lucky because you couldn't really experience that on Arena. But with this new set, the Dungeons & Dragons set, I already know the format, if you will. Like, I can tell you what the best cards are. Like, I've tried a lot of the build around cards. And I've seen a lot of videos on it already. So I'm gonna be going into we're fortunate enough to have like a case flight here in our local area. And I'm going to be going into that probably overly prepared, and I might be going against some guys who haven't seen the cards yet.
I have a comment on that. So, like, for the last 4 Standard sets, I've mentioned maybe before on this, I'm pretty sure, I play what I call a league with my coworker, where every set we open, we both get a box, we open 6 packs right at the beginning, we play a sealed against each other at lunch, and then every day after that, we add a pack to it. But I don't play Arena very much because, like, I play paper and, like, I have a bunch of other hobbies and, like, other things to do in life. But he, like, as a father, his only outlet to play Magic is Arena on his phone and, you know, our work time or our lunch Magic. So every set, like, he comes in so smart because he gets to play it for, like, 2 weeks on Arena before the set comes out. And then the new set, like, we open our sealed. I build a deck and he just proceeds to crush me every time for like the first 8 days of the release before I figure out what's good and what's not. Because I don't play Arena enough.
Right. So I think what I would like for to happen again is the pre-release come, and then maybe during the pre-release, the set drops at the same time on Arena rather than it's a week ahead of the fact that it's a week ahead. During like COVID or during the pandemic, that was fine. But now it's just like, blah, I don't know.
Jeff, did you have any experiences with like dealing with people who played pre-release, or do you do any of the Arena stuff?
I haven't done a sealed yet on Arena because I'm too in love with Historic before it changes and gets destroyed. Honestly, in my opinion, I prefer to have it on Arena early because then you do get to like test it out compared to like before, where a release or pre-release would happen, no one would have access to cards, and then you'd have that one spike that had a bunch of friends that would sit down and like proxy cards and practice and stuff like that. And now everyone's kind of on that fair playing field. If you have a chance to play Arena, you get that access.
I used to sit up on before pre-release with, you know, my friends, and sometimes even with you, Jeff, and I would just read the like set reviews out loud to everyone. Like, that was my prep like for it, and like that was how I would like have the slight advantage I would get. But I do know from Strixhaven personally that you had a lot of experience going into the pre-release with what was good in Strixhaven, Jeff?
I agree and disagree. I played a lot of Strixhaven. Sadly, my draft skills in that set were terrible because I'd open Tendrils of Agony and instantly be like, I'm going to play Storm, and then proceed to lose, you know, 0-3 because I was trying to force Storm in a format that's just not good enough for it. Unless you get all of the right cards, but sealed-wise, like, I definitely did really good in Strixhaven. I think I did a total of 15 of them sealed, and I didn't 7 and X 3 of them.
Oh, nice, man. That's really high. So you got 7 wins on 12?
Yep.
Nice.
What about you, JB? What do you think about the whole set coming out early on Arena versus in paper?
Honestly, I'm totally fine with it. I don't really care about how competitive I am with my sealed stuff, so I just kind of show up at FNM if they're doing it and buy in and play. With Modern Horizons 2, I did do a couple extra just because I wanted more cards, but for the most part, sealed isn't really my cup of tea to begin with, so if people can get access to cards earlier to do a lot more testing, I'm kind of happy about it.
I should say, I don't think it's unfair by any means. I just think that there is a lot of value. I can say firsthand that there is a lot of value in it, like coming from the other end. I can see it. I've seen how valuable it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't saying that it was like an unfair advantage. I'm just saying the pre-releases feel lackluster. I used to love the excitement and seeing, like, actually during the pre-release, like, finding out a combo and be like, oh my god, this is broken, or watching someone else have, like, use a bomb rare against me, or vice versa, and be like, oh my god, I can't believe how devastating this card is, where now it's like, okay, I can tell you, this uncommon sucks, don't fall for it, it's trapped, these rares are not good, don't play those. Like, you should be, and then from, like, a draft perspective, like, you should be taking the common, you know, deal 3 to target creature spell over, you know, your rare or your mythic.
I have heard that the removal in this set is very limited.
So yeah, it's
a play red.
Red's got the couple burn spells. Black's got the removal spell that gets you a treasure in the end, which a lot of things just kill planeswalkers now, which is good, because just back in the day where someone opened a planeswalker, you were just dead. You couldn't beat them ever. So many of the black removal spells now have, like, destroy target creature or planeswalker, which I remember there used to be, like, conversations from, like, an FNM level, like, will they ever print a common destroy target planeswalker spell? And then I think War of the Spark is the first time they did it, and they've just been doing it ever since.
Yeah, because before that, it was always, like, rares. Like, Hero's Downfall, I think, was the first real removal spell that hit creature or planeswalker.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Before we get into today's topic, today's topic is aggro, so we're going to try to talk about it as fast as possible, right, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. I know Josh and Jeff kind of want to plug some individuals. Josh actually had a pretty good experience on FNM. Go ahead and tell us about it.
So I went into FNM the week before through this podcast, I've made it pretty clear that I'm, like, a big Legacy player. So I have my Legacy deck sleeved up. So I went into FNM and I brought my extra sleeves with me and my Legacy deck and all my Modern cards. And I bought a new pack of Dragon Shields to sleeve up the cards from my Modern deck so I could just switch my Modern deck and my Legacy deck interchangeably. Blue, red, Delver, for what it's worth, just to make things clear. Bought the sleeves, sat down, started sleeving up my deck. I put all my Legacy cards into the Dragon Shield box because I didn't have another deck box to put my Legacy cards in. I had my Modern deck and sideboard in my deck box, and I was ready to go. So I pack up. I have my Dragon Shield box, which has my Legacy cards in it. I have my deck box. I have my Trade Binder, and I have my dice bag. I have everything, correct? No. I brought my extra sleeves that I had before, which weren't enough to sleeve up my Legacy deck. So there was 2 Dragon Shield box. I grabbed the wrong Dragon Shield box, which only has the extra sleeves, and I leave my Legacy deck on the table. $2,000 worth of cards. So I would like to personally give a shout out to something that transcends Magic, which is just being a good person and returning things to the proper outlet that don't belong to you. A friendly person found my Legacy deck, brought it to the store, store held it. I woke up in the morning, realized my Legacy cards were missing. I got to the store as soon as they were there, and I was able to retrieve my Legacy deck. And, you know, my weekend was made, but I just want to give a personal shout out to being a good person.
Sweet. I'm really glad that, that you got your cards back, because that's a pretty scary feeling to be like...
Yeah, I had a heart attack in the morning.
Yeah. I could imagine.
No one likes losing volcanic islands.
No, not at all.
Force wills, you name it, man. The list goes on and on.
Losing 2 volcanic islands is okay,
and
though.
And 4 force wills.
Right. Everything. Not only that, like the sideboard, like my null rods were in there, and
yeah, doesn't that card up to like $100 now too?
Something like that. My altar, the old border ponders, the Japanese etched foil Strixhaven brainstorms, and all that. Like there's like everything. Like you know, your deck is personal, and like you wouldn't want your personal deck to get lost forever if it was you. So like it transcends Magic to like get something that doesn't belong to you back to its proper owner. Like it doesn't belong to you, regardless of how much like how you know no one will ever find out. The fact of the matter is the person who lost it does know, and like they feel bad about it. So like let's all be good people and you know get it back to the proper owner.
Mm-hmm. Right. Jeff, you want to give a shout out to the person who did our artwork? We still haven't named that our artwork guy yet.
You should have people send in suggestions. That'd be kind of cool. So a friend of mine does graphic design. I asked him to make our logo. He took a little bit, but he did an awesome job. The logo turned out amazing. He was willing to work with us. He was very friendly about it. His name is Charles Akeed, and he's always looking to do freelance work. So I really appreciate the work he did. It turned out amazing. The color is perfect. And if you ever need anything, definitely let me know, and I can help you out with that because he's great at what he does. And again, much appreciated, Charles.
Yeah, for sure. It's sweet.
Yeah, I love that. I don't know when we're gonna come up with a name for him, but we gotta give him a name.
The Lake Mac, cause of Mimic.
Mac's pretty good. Well, we'll figure out something. We'll have to just argue about it for months before we decide.
Like true Magic players.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, guys. So the name of the game is Aggro today. JB, can you give me the other three types of Magic? There are other three types of deck styles that there are. The kind of the broad spectrum of them.
Well, I mean, there's control where, you know, you want to play a long game and you have a bunch of options in order to hold out until then, and then you drop one or two really big spells that kind of take over the match. Then there's mid-range where you have a bunch of middling creatures that have a couple of effects that are strong enough to kind of hold the game over into the next, you know, into the next section. And then there's combo, which just kind of wants to win on turn like two or three and doesn't want to really interact with the opponent at all other than protecting their combo.
Right. So if you think of like the classic like rock, paper, scissors, you have aggro loses to mid-range. Mid-range loses to control. Control loses to aggro. And then combo is just nonsense off to the side.
Pretty much, yeah.
Aggro definitely has an up on combo.
Oh, for sure.
So I also, the thing about combo is I think combo fits into all three types because I feel like there's control combo, there's mid-range combo, there's aggro combo. So I feel like the three are the main ones and combo just kind of sneaks into each of them.
I think traditionally it would be control combo and aggro. It would be control beats aggro, aggro beats combo, combo beats control. But mid-range and combo have both kind of evolved into different, like, mutations of each other and, like, variants.
Mm-hmm. All right, Josh, tell me the kind of what aggro's trying to do, what its dynamic is in the game of Magic.
So what an aggro deck wants to do is very similar to a burn deck, which is count to 20 with, you know, the most efficient creatures you have in whatever colors you are doing. There's various flavors of what you want to do. You can have a white deck. You can play a white stacksy creature deck with like Thalia and the Leonin Arbiter. You can play a white weenie deck, which is all the one drop tutus. You can play a red traditional red aggro deck, which is like Goblin Guide and Eidolon and the new other prowess one, Soul Scar Mage. The purpose of aggro is to just in your colors, put pressure on the board with creatures knowing that you have a reliable source of your taking your opponent's life points away that kind of demands an answer.
I mean, your window for like victory is like pretty narrow, but you definitely also give that to your opponent. They also have a narrow window to interact with you before the game's over.
Right.
Yeah, I always liken it to having a really explosive start and then you barely cross the finish line.
Right.
Like those people that do marathons and run full sprint at the beginning and somehow make it to the end. Might not be first, but you still make it.
Sure, you just take off. First. Nice. All right, so there's a lot of styles of aggro, and I'm going to kind of go around the horn and kind of ask you guys, but I'll start with Jeff, because I know you're a big burn advocate, and just go ahead and like tell us like what burn and RDW, kind of that style of aggro, is trying to do and what it looks like.
So first off, a lot of people tend to like group them together, which isn't true. They do share a lot of similar cards, but they are very different. Like Burn is primarily a deck that's going to like, you know, you see turn one Mountain Bolt, you're 99% sure probably playing against, you know, if your opponent goes Mountain Lava Spike, it's hit or miss. You could be RDW or Burn, but Burn's purpose or style is count to 20 with instants and sorceries and sometimes play creatures that benefit from that. RDW is more of a, you more see it in standard these days. You don't really see it outside of that too often, but it's more of a play a bunch of creatures, put pressure as fast as possible, back it up with like a couple burn spells or a couple pump spells to make sure that you could get through. The most memorable one I can remember most recently was in standard with, I always forget his name, Annex. So they play the 3-drop that gets pumped based on its devotion to red, and then you would play like Embercleave and like all these other like smaller creatures that benefited from that kind of stuff. So RDW is going to be more of a creature, tend to be more creature based, and then Burn is going to obviously be more burn spells that are slinging stuff like Fire Blast, where you're sacking mountains because you don't care because you just want to hit, make sure your opponent dies.
From that style of aggro, what would be the biggest weakness it has, or what cards it does not want to see?
So red deck wins definitely doesn't want to see board wipes. That's a big weakness. And any big creature over basically like 4 or 5 toughness, because it becomes really hard to push through that. And they can just block, kill your stuff off slowly, and still like survive enough to stabilize. Honestly, Burn's biggest weakness is just going to, it's mainly to me life gain or taxing decks. Because when you have to pay 2 mana to play a lightning bolt, it becomes infinitely worse than just playing a lightning bolt for 1 red. So I'd say Burn's biggest weakness is probably life gain or taxing, and red deck wins is going to be like board wipes or big dudes. Like Torrential Gearhulk was always a problem when I used to play RDW back in the day. Like the card just would bring back something, remove a creature, and then block all your dudes all day.
Or even Baneslayer Angel.
Yeah, so much lifelink. That card's an can we not talk about that card?
That's like that RDW's worst nightmare.
I had a couple times when I used to play Boros in that standard, and I'd get them down to 3, and then they'd slam a Baneslayer, and it's like, well, you got First Strike, lifelink. Like, how do I even deal with this?
Right.
What about Teferi?
Teferi, so Teferi's a little different. Thalia is a dude with First Strike, which makes it harder to swing through. Teferi, yeah, it taxes, but as soon as they minus to bounce one of your things and pass, if they don't have the counterspell, you just kill it. You just bolt it. It's dead. The tax is gone. No problems.
Is that a fair trade, though? Is the
I will gladly
3 mana draw card,
bounce something.
Your opponent spends a lightning bolt. Is that worth it?
It's really contextual.
I don't think it's about if it's worth it or not. It's about if it's going to allow you to win or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes the Teferi doesn't do anything. Sometimes you play it and you bounce from Monastery Swisher, and they're just like, okay, I'll play it, and then I'm not even going to attack the Teferi because its effect doesn't do anything. I'm just going to smash your head in.
Yeah, I think Teferi is more effective against Burn than it is against RDW, because RDW, again, tends to be more creature-based aggro, so like they're like, whatever, like, yeah, I can't play my one pump spell or my one burn spell, but I'm still going to swing at you for 12.
The amount of Teferis I've sent to their death against Burn or an RDW deck is kind of unfair, knowing that it's going to die, but
we'll admit
it's like Teferi, it's worth it to draw cards out of those.
Well, you have to. You're playing against a deck that's putting pressure on your life total right away. You have to draw. I will admit Teferi is really good against Rift Bolt. Oh, feels sure. Real bad when you suspend one and then your opponent goes, all right, Teferi, and you're like, well, that's not resolving unless I pay one. Or no, it's not resolving at all.
It just is gone forever.
Yeah.
Pretty hard counter, yeah.
Teferi used to be my favorite Magic card, but it's still Raisin Borrower.
That's card crazy. Was a mistake. Card Teferi? Is a mistake. Yes.
Why was Teferi? Why was that your favorite Magic card? I played that card because it was so dominant, but I hated that card.
That's because I also hated that card, but if I was playing it, then it was like, you know, I didn't feel so bad when my opponent played it.
Can't beat them, join them.
Right. Exactly. I did the same thing with Abrupt Decay. If you can't beat them, join them.
Nice. All right, JB. So White Weenie encompasses kind of a lot. I'm going to have you kind of talk about that. There's different styles going and break it down for me.
So the main White Weenie that I think of when I think of White Weenie is the taxing stuff in Legacy. So you're looking at like Death and Taxes, which is usually primarily mono white. Every once in a while they'll splash for some cards, but as a deck, I feel like White Weenie wants to play creatures that cost one or two that have very large effects on the board that make either the game slow down or make them survive longer or make them bigger. So when you're talking about White Weenie, you're talking about like anthem effects, you're talking about taxing abilities, you're talking about survivability with something like Adanto Vanguard way back when the mono white deck was real in standard. There's quite a few other things that have come to the toolkit over the last year or two that I think have really helped it out when it gets to like the mid game. So you're talking about things like Skyclave Apparition. That card's a great example of something that became like toolbox in all White Weenie decks as a way to be able to continue to push through with your creatures.
My favorite White Weenie was Lorwyn era White Weenie.
I was about to say it was Kithkin, right? Kithkins were great.
Do you remember when M10 came out and Elite Vanguard was like the uncommon Savannah Lions, and that thing was good for about 2 weeks before everybody realized, oh, 2/1s aren't good. And that also came out with Honor of the Pure as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, the 1-drop 2/1.
Yeah.
I played it.
What's the white one that's like artifacts, creatures, or something get +2/+2?
Are you talking about the 1/1 from Aether? No. Aether?
It's like a 1-white-white enchantment from Scars of Mirrodin.
Oh, Tempered Steel.
Yeah. I played that in the store.
That deck was so bad in standard. I remember people playing that and just like, oh, if you don't draw your Tempered Steel, your entire deck is just Memnites. Okay.
Yep.
Does that count as White Weenie? I think so.
It's pretty close. It's like it's one concept. Anthem effect. You just kind of just go wide. Just hope to beat him down with an anthem effect. But yeah, cards like Mother of Ruin are just so powerful in that archetype. Just being able to put that down and then just, you have to have the removal right there or your removal is dead for the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm. The difference between Mother of Ruins and Giver of Ruins is very night and day, but you still do have to respect Giver of Ruins in Modern.
For sure. Josh, I want you to kind of break down Zoo. I know it's going to be a little bit similar to Burn, but Zoo has its own name and it's kind of existed. And now we're seeing less of it, but back in the day, that was such a huge archetype.
So traditionally, Zoo gets its name from the variants of creatures that it would play. You who were playing all the like animals, you would see at a zoo. The first thing that comes to mind when anyone hears Zoo is Wild Nacatl. And then because you are already playing like forest, mountain, and plains, you go straight into Curdape. And then from there, even like if you go back way back in the day, some lists would play Loam Lion, and then you quickly evolved into Bloodbraid Elf, which you're hitting your Lightning Bolts and your Lightning Helix. So the deck kind of just builds itself.
Dude, you're forgetting nowadays, the best animal.
Tarmogoyf.
Yeah.
Tarmogoyf.
Right. Blurgoyf, right.
Even and like back then, you would do the Bloodbraid Ram Gang. It's here for the gangbang.
Oh, yeah, I remember those days.
Bogart Ramgang is the card we're referencing with Bloodbraid Elf. But that was what the traditional Zoo deck was. It was like playing all the hyper-efficient creatures that are under-costed but have strict requirements based off your land types, which you're playing all the... The deck now has evolved. Traditionally, you would play the Forest, Mountain, Plains, and now it's evolved into like a domain style where you're playing all five. And back when the deck first evolved and got its name, you were playing 3/3s. Now the deck is playing 4/4s and 5/5s on turn two with the new Draco and the other red-green guy. I have
the Kavu.
Yeah, the Kavu. And that's what a Zoo list is. You can even get different variants with it. You can play, like, there's Tribal Flames variants where now the deck plays Tribal Flames, I'm pretty sure.
Well, it used to, too. That was, like, one of the most powerful cards in that deck, and it's even better now with Triomes.
And you get you get Ignoble Hierarch now too, so yep. You get the Exalted. I remember back when in the early days of Modern, we're talking very early days of Modern, I played a Zoo deck with Noble Hierarch, and I was playing Bloodbraid Elf and like Muldrifter. I was so bad at Magic.
Yeah, the Zoo decks back then, like the initial one, I mean, you even had Wild Nacatl banned, and we look at Wild Nacatl now, it's kind of like comical. Even Curdape was banned once in Standard, too.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That put me off Modern when they banned Wild Nacatl. I stopped playing Modern about then until 2018.
Oh, wow.
That was a very long time. That's why it took me a very long time to open my open back up to Modern because I didn't want to get banned again.
Yeah. I remember the most vivid version of Zoo to me is back in the extended days where they played Wild Nacatl, Loam Lion, Steplinks, and Curdape. It was basically an all one drop deck, and I think it also played Bushwhacker then too.
It did as a finisher.
Did it have Ranger in there, or was that too much mana?
Ranger Vios. Yeah. I do believe it ran it as a one or a two to go search them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People swear by that card, and you should, because that card is the house.
One of the craziest things about Zoo is what it does to your own life total. Like, it's like fetch shock, fetch shock, fetch shock. Like, very often you're down to 11, and the way you kind of recoup that life total is typically they'll play Lightning Bolt and Lightning Helix just to kind of get some life total back. So when you're going against other aggro matchups, you're not just dying to like a couple lava spikes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Does this deck lose to two lightning bolts? Bolt, snap, bolt.
It's pretty crazy. Sometimes you would see some insane stuff, especially when like Splinter Twin was the thing. You had to like not just go like shock, shock. Sometimes you would just shock the first one, and then the future ones, you were just like coming into play tapped unless you had big plays or 2-mana plays, what have you. The next one, Jeff, I'm going to have you take this. It's tribal, and tribal is one of those things that just has so many different tribes, but specifically when it comes to an aggro, there are specific tribes that are aggressive.
So yeah, the most famous ones I would have to say are obviously Merfolk and Goblins, and now we have Humans because, you know, they get everything in every set.
Humans is so gross, and like every set there's something is like, wow, did they really need to make this a human? The new one, the Esper, or the
Esper Sentinel.
The Esper Sentinel, that card, it didn't need to be a human. That was just so nasty.
But so besides those three, I would have mentioned like Elves as one, but I feel like they tend to be a little more combo nowadays. There is an aggro version in Modern, it's just not as popular. But so what Tribal is going to do is their goal is to play a bunch of creatures of the same type that all help each other out. Like for Goblins, they have Goblin Ringleader that comes in, looks at top four, put all goblins in your hand, Goblin Lackey, when it deals damage, put a goblin in play. And then you have Chieftain that gives all your goblins haste and +1/+1. War Chief makes them cheaper and gives them haste. I'm only mentioning goblins because I used to play goblins in Legacy back in the day, but I also played Merfolk. But the big difference between Tribal is like, I know we're talking about aggro and everything, but sometimes I feel like Tribal doesn't always have to be aggro. Like, I've seen more control versions of Merfolk before, but Merfolk tends to be pretty aggro. Like, they go a different route. They try to get through by, like, turning your lands into islands and giving all their stuff island walk. They also get access to Mutavault, which all Tribal decks do, I guess, technically, but they swing with the 2/2 that gets buffed from all their guys. And aggro's goal is to just put pressure and have everything buff everything. So, like, even if you remove one, they're still getting buffed from other things. Their anthems come from their creatures and the fact that they are all the same creature type. Humans, I feel like, is a little different version of aggro because I don't really think they have anthem effects. It's more stuff that comes in and puts counters on stuff because you're playing humans, which is even grosser.
Right. It's like a form of an anthem. Either way, you play a spell that buffs your team, and except for that one, it's a permanent buff, so you can't really get blowout potential, because once it's the counters are there, they exist.
Yeah, what's that? Thalia's Lieutenant, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's like the most degenerate one. Insane.
A couple things that's like kind of makes Tribal what it is, they're typically Aether Vial decks, and with the Aether Vial, it just makes them like so powerful, just because you get those free spells. And Cavern, these decks are able to manipulate Cavernous Souls probably better than any other deck to be able to use as a rainbow land and uncounterable.
I forgot the two most important tribal cards.
They're not actually like a human, but they just always go, like, every single time you see these tribal decks, unless it was like elves, like you said, that style, it's like Aether Vial or Cavernous Souls.
There's part of me that really likes that Aether Vial cheats in the creature in a way that you can't interact with once the ability is resolved.
I disagree with that statement. The worst is when you see your opponent go turn one Cavernous Souls, name their tribal, and then they play Aether Vial with it, and you're like, well, yeah, I'm not doing anything.
Yeah, it's a control. It's a control deck's worst nightmare. It's like, well, I can't counter anything, and they're going to be double spelling every turn off of one land. It's like, great.
That ancient ziggurat or whatever, that land is also very good.
Yeah, that tends to only see play in humans, though. I haven't really seen it outside of that.
It's like a $5 uncommon.
Yeah, maybe Unclaimed Territory too, especially because you can name it's similar to
that one, yeah.
Yeah. the Ancient Ziggurat's like kind of fallen off. Back when there was an unclaimed territory, you definitely just played Ancient Ziggurat, but it was always like such a beating when you're opening head two Ancient Ziggurats and Aether Vial because you couldn't use the Ancient Ziggurat to cast Aether Vial.
So I think we couldn't remember the new card's name, but I remembered
Ancient Ziggurat.
I feel like it only shows up mainly in humans though, because humans tends to play multiple different colored humans versus like goblins where they're like black red and merfolk is mono blue, and so they don't really need Ancient Ziggurat to like make sure they have those colors.
Someone did like a spreadsheet of every magic card and every magic card printed and divided up by creature type.
Yeah.
And like humans just was like insanely bigger than anything else.
Yeah, they did a thing. I forgot what set they did it with. It might have been Innistrad, but like if you look at Mother of Ruins, like the old printings, it was just a cleric. There wasn't a human type, and there was, I forget the old sets that used to have like search for, you know, whatever. They call them rebels, but it was like search for something with the same type. And back then, that was a mechanic that worked because not everything was named human, but they threw human onto literally like every card.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It had to be Innistrad because that's when they did Champion of the Parish. That's when it referred to humans, and then they just like. It's like what they did now with the Modern Horizons. A bunch of old cards now got the type Phyrexian, which that wasn't a type before.
Didn't they do that with dogs and cats?
Yeah, not cats, but all hounds are dogs now.
That got switched. It didn't get added.
Yeah.
I liked the test card that said the all hound that like there was a playtest card from the Mystery Boosters that said all hounds are dogs, and then it said we'll errata this later.
That's pretty funny. I'm not sure why they errata that.
Just because of the new set that had dogs in it. That was what, like M19 or M20? Because sure. It had the creature type dog, and a lot of people were like, well, a hound is a dog. So to make it so those buffs will happen for hounds, they changed it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a weird interaction.
Money.
Yeah, exactly. I had a weird interaction with like against a human deck where my opponent didn't really realize because I'd have what's the 2/2 Phyrexian carrier for the one that gives that you name a creature type. Oh, Plague Engineer. That's the one. I named it, and he was like, "Well, this isn't a human," and put Mother or Ruin in play. I was like, "Nah, that nope, that's a human. Put that back in your hand." He's like, it's a cleric. I'm like, no. Yeah. I was like, no, that's a human. It's been errated. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only other tribe that I think I want to mention is Spirits. That's the one that people fell off the radar. That one, again, it uses Collected Company kind of as a tactic, and it's mainly based on like Flash, but it's similar in the sense of like Merfolk, where it has counter spells and interacts with the stack more actively than the other tribes do. But just with cards like Spell Queller, and then they've also got a bunch of Anthem effects with the one from Innistrad that gives Hexproof, which that one's the Degenerate one, and then the 2-mana ones with the Phantasm.
That's the Pioneer Tribal form deck.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then the last thing I want to talk about is Tempo. I know, Josh, you play a ton of Delver, and you might not consider that to be in a lot of people's eyes that is, but I guess go ahead and break down what like Tempo is.
So, like, Tempo... It's at its heart, it definitely is an aggro deck because you want to put out a hyper efficient, under costed, really good creature. So like, or technically, or most of the time, it also has got some kind of evasion stapled on it. So like, Delver is a 1-mana 3/2 flying. It's hyper efficient, under costed, and it's got evasion, and you just protect it. You don't want to like overextend yourself. You want to make your opponent have the answer, and then you know you want to build your deck in a way that's going to protect your hype undercosted threat. And just you want to trade one for ones, and because all your cards are better than your opponent's, you're going to end up winning. If you're trading one for one, you're going to end up winning the game, and you just want to keep the tempo. Trade one for one all day. If you can get a 2-for-1, you've won the game.
The last time I think we saw Tempo and like Standard was the mono blue deck with Curiosity or whatever that, not Curiosity, but the newer version from like Ixalan, where you just played a one drop that had evasion or unblockable, and then you're like, all right, this now has +1/+1, and when it deals damage, I draw a card. So you were just literally just drawing counter spells and just beating them down with the 2/2 and just countered every spell.
I hated that deck.
Everyone hated that deck. It's so miserable to play against.
It for you.
A little bit.
I do remember that deck. Okay. I was trying to like think of what you were talking about.
I forget the name of the card. Is it Curious Obsession?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't remember. Because there's curiosity, but that doesn't buff it. This one does buff it, and no, I think there was two versions.
It's curious obsession.
Right.
Yeah.
That was from like.
It cost like $20 to build.
Mm-hmm. It was played so heavily in that standard format.
You get to play that big 3/3 flyer that gets buffed for every island you have.
Star 4.
Yeah, that card was awesome. I mean, that deck was like fun, but after you played again, once they like you didn't realize you were beat, but when they would just go like turn one guy, turn two, Curious Obsession, and then have like Spell Pierce, and then the following turn have, you know, there was a couple counter spells that existed, and they were kind of situational, but you're just getting beat down over and over by that card.
Wizard's Retort.
Yeah, that's the one.
Then you had the 2/2 wizard that had flash and tapped something when it entered the battlefield. So
yeah, the merfolk, merfolk wizard.
Yeah, so you ended up getting just counterspell.
Over and over and over.
Yeah.
Well, they also drew cards, so they were one for one of you and gaining card advantage at the same time, and you just weren't able to like see that. Like people didn't realize that they were just dead. So that's a lot that we talked about aggro. Do you think anybody here feels that we missed anything?
I want to know what your choice out of those would be, Tony. What's your favorite version?
I was a big advocate for Death and Taxes, just because it has like different angles of attack. One, being able to wasteland and Rishad import your opponent, and then also you had ways to get big giant like dumb creatures in the form of like Stoneforge Mystic going to grab Batterskull, and just being able to do that.
So if you had to pick one you'd actually want to play, it would be Death and Taxes and Legacy.
Yep. Even though I think it's abysmal nowadays, like I think how Legacy lines up, that deck still shows up, and I don't know how it produces results, because I swear every time I play that deck, I draw six planes, and I'm like, I don't know how anybody wins with this deck. It makes no sense.
I feel like you have to get you have to win a lot of die rolls.
That too.
Nothing feels worse than playing against Death and Taxes, and they're at three, and you sack your last two mountains to blast them, and in response, they Swords to Plowshare their own Thalia.
Yep. I gotcha.
JB, yeah. I bet you can't guess what I would play if I played aggro.
I wonder. I don't know.
You're more of a Kamehameha kind of guy, so you're going to get some of that X spells. Oh, yeah.
X spells. Got to bring in the Bane Fire.
Yeah.
There was a point in time where you could not get me off of Bloodbraid Elf.
Well, you were forced to because it was banned at one point, and then they unbanned it again. Yeah.
Right.
Is that when you came back to Modern? Is when they unbanned
That was like the same banning too, right? They banned Bloodbraid Elf and Nakal in the same thing, I think.
It was Bloodbraid and Deathrite at the same time, which was like, that didn't make sense. It was like so stupid when they did that.
Mm-hmm. That's like right when I quit Modern. It's like, you can't quit Magic. Don't ever tell yourself you're quitting Magic, because it's not going to happen.
You'll get dragged back in every single time.
Mm-hmm. It's healthy to like do a cleansing if you need a cleansing, because I do that like almost like I used to do it like every year, just like downsize my Magic collection. But don't ever convince yourself that you're getting out of the game, because you'll come back.
You guys ever completely sold off everything ever?
Yes.
Usually people that completely sell everything get out for good. I've piece sold stuff when I've done what Josh does, like downsize, but never have I ever like sold everything, and I don't think I've ever taken a break.
Twice I have. The first time I didn't touch Magic for like I think a year or two after that, but I got into it randomly because a coworker was like, "Hey man, I'm getting into Magic. Have you heard of it?" And I'm like, "Oh man, not this again." And then the other time, I think I got back into it like a couple months later because I happened to like buy a pack randomly and opened something like really valuable and traded in and got a standard deck at the time. But I've sold out twice. I don't think I can ever do it again because it's just so terrible to rebuild.
I could definitely see myself selling out again, besides my cube and maybe one EDH deck.
Yeah, then you're not out. If you're still in it, it'll drag you back in. That's the key. If you're going to sell out and try to get out of the game for good, you can't have anything. Usually people keep like one EDH deck, and when I worked at a store, the amount of times people would sell everything but their EDH deck, and then 6 months later, come back and buy it all back.
Right. I don't think I'll ever sell my cube. So like, because no one A is going to want it, because it's like uncommons only, and people who want a cube want, you know, you hear a cube and you want either like a Innistrad or like a themed cube like that, or you want
the big guns,
Power 9.
Yeah, you want. I like my uncommons only cube because like you do get the high power level, and you get the like flavor, or you get the feeling that it's like actually a limited format, because like uncommons are where that when you're playing limited. So it definitely has a good feel to it. So, and I don't think I'll ever get rid of it. It's all sleeved up and ready to go. It's just one of those things you can just keep in a box and forget about.
You probably won't like that. I prefer Pauper Cubes just because they're so much fun. They're awesome, but they can't have Planeswalkers in it. It kind of feels like old Magic.
I will tell you that like when they printed Uncommon Planeswalkers and I added, like, it changed the cube.
For sure. It made it feel like more of a cube, but a really powered down version, I guess.
That definitely is how it feels now. People who are drafting it first time and they're like, what do I draft first? They're like, well, if you open a Planeswalker, like, they're pretty good. Even like in this context, like even the one that makes walls or whatever, the Teo or whatever,
Hexproof, make an 0-4 wall.
Right. Even that's like got its value in limited.
Nice. All right, dude. I got a question of the week, and I think Josh also has a follow-up one, so guess what? Double whammy. Two questions of the week.
Dang.
So I wanted to ask you guys, aside from Magic, what other hobbies are you really into? You can pick your favorite one. It can be your second favorite one, but what do you do outside other than Magic?
Cry. I'm just kidding.
I love it.
So my favorite hobby outside of Magic is actually probably streaming. I really enjoy playing video games. I'm really big on like multiplayer games. It's also why I got into streaming recently. Anyone listening want to follow someone who plays games? CB Blood Ninja on Twitch. But I really like survival games. Like, I've been playing DayZ a lot. I really enjoy going into a map and scavenging, finding people, maybe offing them, but, you know,
yeah,
surviving. It's just, I don't know, like, it feels rewarding to, like, when you play a game like that, to, like, survive, because, like, you're not meant to. Like, the game's meant to kill you. It's meant to be hard. So I also enjoy Dark Souls games.
Yeah, I heard so many like people suggest for me to play Dark Souls, and I've seen the game, but that game requires a real dedication to it, and you have to be able to get over the frustration factor.
I was going to say, do you have enough money to replace your controller? Because if you don't, it's not worth playing. I broke two 360 controllers playing the first one before I learned how to play those games.
Wow. Dude, what I'll say about DayZ is I don't think I've ever had that much fun laying in an airfield with a ghillie suit on.
Oh, man, I was playing today before we recorded the podcast, and a guy walked up to the car I had and looted it, and I waited for him to walk around the car, and I put my gun up, and I popped on the mic, and I was like, hey, man, don't move, and he, like, puts his hands up, and he was like, all right, man, I'll give you your stuff back, and I made him drop all his stuff, and then I was like, give me your shoes and your pants, too, so he takes them off, and then I ended up shooting him.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I would be a fight kind of guy. I don't think I would ever surrender. Like, you know what? You're going to have to shoot me or I'm going to try to shoot you.
I don't trust anyone in that game. I've had too many people like, hey, man, follow me. We got stuff in the house you can get. And then you walk in the house and they hit you in the head with a rock. It's not fun.
JB, I don't want to hear about your anime, so let me hear something else.
I mean, hey, I don't even watch that much anime. Let's be real. I ain't a big anime fan. I like it, but I ain't watching it.
I don't use your eyes, so I don't know.
I wonder who watches the most anime.
Me.
Oh, damn.
I watch a lot. I bet I watch more than JB, probably.
I guarantee it. I don't watch anything new, man. That I'll watch old stuff all the time, but I won't really watch new stuff very often.
So you're a boomer? You don't like new stuff?
Yep. You can call me the anime boomer.
Yeah, the anime boomer.
Otherwise, I keep on getting re-addicted to the farmer sim games, you know, kind of like Harvest Moon stuff. Like, I just find myself every couple of months playing a new one and enjoying it.
Stardew Valley?
Yeah. Stardew.
It's a great game.
The game's so good.
I think I beat it like 3 times just because I'll go back and play it again.
Right. You have it on your phone?
No. I just do it all on computer.
That's the one game I have on my phone. I guess Pokemon Go, too. I have 2 games on my phone.
Nice. All right, Josh, give me your hobby.
So I like to think that music is my passion. It always has been for a very long time in my life. I guess I kind of got out of it when I was in college because, I put priorities first. But now in my adult life, now that I have, disposable income, I'm calling this my year in art school. So I'm enjoying music as a hobby more and more. I'd like to say that I tried the intro, making the intro short this for this podcast. If you like it, give us some feedback and give us a heads up or whatever. I'll mess around with it and maybe bring some more variants in the weeks coming forward.
Oh, man. Yeah, out of everything, I'm really into cooking, and mainly because it's like an ego stroker for me, because I like to present. I don't like eating my own food, even though it's delicious. I like to watch other people's face when they eat my food. So I try really hard. I bake. I try to make pies. I do a lot of cookies during Christmas, and then usually it's just like throughout the summer and even into like late fall, I'll be just using my smoker. And I just got a deep fryer a couple of months ago, and I've just been throwing everything. Like, you know what? Let's see if we can fry it.
I remember you saying stuff like that. You got the deep fryer, and you're like, I have to use this weekend.
Yeah, I just keep using it, and I mean, the only problem is like I've definitely gained weight because it's hard to like fry that or start that thing up because it's a process. But then just be like, I'm just gonna put 6 like wings in there. No, we're putting 20 in. Let's see what happens.
Hey, man, if you like watching people's faces when they eat your food, definitely let me know. I will always be down to come down and eat food.
Right.
Nope.
I need to buy a new slow cooker because mine has a crack in it.
Yeah.
Like a big crack, not like a little crack. Like there's a substantial crack that might split like in half all the way down the middle. It's like,
have you ever...
it's cracked in half like 80% down the middle.
Dude, that's unusable. It's not.
Yeah,
it's a mess waiting to happen.
That's what I'm saying. I need a new one. I probably shouldn't use it anymore.
You can go to like a Goodwill style store, and then they always have that kind of stuff sitting there. And
but it's definitely kind of, you look at it and it's like, hang in there, little bud. You're still hanging in there.
Such a gamble. You're like, oh, I can just come home and there's just like
food
meat,
everywhere.
Meat juice all everywhere. It's not even just water. It's meat juice.
Josh, you had a question?
Oh, yes. Okay, so not in addition to FNM this weekend, on Monday, I participated in a Modern Horizons 2 draft, which was Rare Redraft. I took 4th place, and you guys are going to be me. Keep in mind, I already have a set of Urza Sagas, so my prize for the night was either I had the choice of pick of a Urza Saga, a Grief, or a Solitude. That's the white one, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
What do you guys take?
Gotta be Urza Saga.
Urza Saga. Other two are like $12 to $15.
How are you looking at money?
$18 and $22. Both of the red, black and white one are $18, and the Urza Saga was $22. I already have a set of Urza Saga. Keep that in mind. So like maybe give what you would take and what you think I took, but what do you guys think?
I think you took Solitude.
I was going to say Solitude is the best of the other two to take, I think. Even if the Grief is actually seeing play in decks, I think Solitude will actually find a home sooner or later.
I think you took the Saga.
I did take the Saga, but I had to convince myself to take the Saga because I really wanted to take the Grief. But
yeah.
I like to hear that the Solitude was probably the better choice. But so I have a Urza Saga for trade, but...
Give it a month or two, and I feel like the Grief decks will be fully gone.
Mm-hmm. They might be.
They're still pretty good, I think.
Oh, for sure. The people who want Grief decks are going to still play them, because Modern's not an easy format to just like shift your deck completely, and the Urza Saga is such a high-wanted card. Like, you're going to have no problem moving that card.
Right, and for what it's worth, like you just said everything you said about Urza Saga is correct, but with the black decks in general, I feel like black decks have way more of like pet Magic players than anyone else. Like, so I feel like people who show up and I want to play my mono black deck happens than more else than like any other color in Magic.
Yeah, and mono black's definitely playing Grief, whereas like blue white control is where Solitude mainly goes, and there's some other variants of that too, but there's a billion different versions of blue white, so it depends on the version you're playing, right? Whereas mono black's gonna be playing Grief.
Yeah,
there's always that mono black player at your store
for sure. Great cast overall. We're on Facebook. Give us a like and a listen. You can actually find a lot of our content there. Follow us on Twitter, and if you have any updates, or if you want updates on our episodes and when they're coming out, and then feel free to send us a question at thepaperplayerpodcast@gmail.com. That is paperplayerpodcast@gmail.com. And yes, I did check, fellas. No questions this week. So maybe next week.
Dude, I was about to say.
Even send us dumb questions like, what pants are you wearing?
How tall are you? I will never admit the truth.
6 foot, bro.
I was going to say, I'm just going to start sending fake questions like a chump.
I'm sick of a bunch of alt
emails.
My biceps are 33 inches, so don't mess.
So we're just telling a bunch of lies tonight.
I always lie. I never tell the truth. It's so hard to.
The Magic the Gathering. It's all part of the game, right? You have to bluff.
Hey, bluffing is a big part of it.
I mean, if you ever, play a thing called EDH, that's like, all I do is lie in EDH. I cannot lie.
How do you think the politics work in there, man? Hey, man, I promise I won't attack you if you let this go through.
People are so honest. It's unreal.
Since we did like just plug EDH, I have to say that I want to go back and talk about tribal. If you're playing tribal in EDH, every single card needs to be tribal. Otherwise, it's not tribal.
Yeah.
I disagree. Changelings count.
Changelings walk a very fine line. Your changelings count, but like if you're playing changelings in your green ooze deck and you're playing Toski, then your deck is no longer tribal.
I'm with you.
But it is an ooze.
Toski's not an ooze.
Oh, I get what you're saying. Well,
you just edit this all out. Nobody needs to hear this. You just keep going.
I hate EDH. I hate EDH.
Just cut it.
Every time you guys just start going on an EDH rant, I just blank out and start staring at my screen.
You will play with us, and you will love it.
This is exactly an EDH game.
Yeah, really, it is. Three people having fun and one person regretting sitting down.
You've committed $10. You're not going anywhere.